everyone, and welcome to another episode of Upzoned, where every week we take just one big story from the week in the news and we upzone it. We talk about it in depth and through a Strongtown's lens. I'm Kia, and I am back this week with my pal Chuck. How you doing today, Chuck?
I'm doing great. I'm actually kind of tense right now, though. Well, because we're recording this on Wednesday afternoon, and we have 2 hours and 15 minutes left until the Major League Baseball trade deadline. And my team should be trading for some pitching, and nothing has happened yet. So I'm really, I've been hitting refresh.
Yeah, that explains a lot about the mood the man I live with was in this morning, too. So thank you for filling me in. I live with a big baseball fan and a big fantasy baseball player also. So let's talk about something that is of some local importance, but actually I think we'll speak to people who are interested in federal policy as well. We here at Strongtowns do not, of course, take a position of voting for any candidate or endorsing any candidate, rather, as an organization. We are a nonprofit 501c3, but you know, you might have heard that there is a national election coming up next year, a little thing called the presidential election. And it's given us some interesting fodder for Upzoned over the last few months, because some of the candidates are local leaders who are talking about how they would translate their policies if they took the national leadership stage. And one of them is New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, who came to Politico with a really interesting quote in an article that we'll share in the comments. He would like to see the Vision Zero policy that he's helped to implement in his city go national. He says he sees no reason why it can't happen. And, you know, we have not actually talked about Vision Zero, you and I, Chuck, and I thought it would be an interesting moment to talk about kind of what is the Strongtowns sort of view on Vision Zero, and what would it look like if that got applied from the top down, quite literally from the federal office all the way down to local municipalities. So let's just start with the basics. What is Vision Zero in your words, Chuck? I'm going to make you write an essay question out loud. And how do you think about it through a Strongtowns lens? I'm curious.
That's a really good question. And I'm glad you asked it, because I probably will anger some people. Vision Zero has been one of those things where I've been completely sympathetic to the motivations of people, the general concept, the goals, a lot like Complete Streets, where like the people who advocate for Complete Streets, I'm on board. Like I totally get it. I'm a little bit burdened by being an engineer and maybe overthinking some of these things at times. Vision Zero, the idea is that we should have zero deaths on roadways, on city streets. It's hard to disagree with that. And not only is it hard to disagree with that, you know, theoretically, but even functionally. I mean, why do we accept 30 plus thousand deaths a year on our nation's streets and roadways? It is horrific. We should not be accepting of any deaths. And so, yes, I was like fully on board with Vision Zero. I think one of the things that I've struggled with is that the implementation of this tends to be overly simplistic. Let's lower speed limits is one of like the primary things to do. As an engineer, I can tell you lowering speed limits does nothing, does little to nothing. In fact, I think there's a good case to be made that simply lowering speed limits while keeping environments that are engineered for high speeds creates a more dangerous situation, because you have this variability in expectation. You have some people who will follow the law, even if it doesn't comport to what they're being induced to do. There's other people who will follow their inducement and not follow the law. And so you create these environments that are really a messy soup of distraction and bad signaling. So I think if we talk about New York's, I've got a lot to say about their approach that is a lot more positive. But Vision Zero in general, like the goals are fantastic. I think when the implementation starts with speed and enforcement, as opposed to an acknowledgement of the design inducements we have created in our system designed for speed, we run into all kinds of structural problems that I don't think you'll fix through enforcement.
I think that's a really good distinction. And, you know, it brings a lot of nuance to our hashtag slow the cars, which I think some people on a first read, you know, this is the hazards of social media, see that and they think that it means hashtag lower the speed limits. It doesn't at all. It means that we recognize that signs on the side of the road don't have nearly the amount of impact on driver behavior as narrowing that road, creating, you know, some distractions on that road that are going to cause people to be alert, like street trees that if they veered off the side of the road, they could hit them. Those things are really important. And I've heard the same criticism of Vision Zero that you're pointing out, Chuck, which is that I would welcome anyone who has a little bit more knowledge of the history of Vision Zero. But, you know, I think we are safe to say generally that Vision Zero started as a policy in Sweden. It was very comprehensive in how it was applied over there. And, you know, this is the hazard of top-down policy-based approaches to changing our built environments, is that as Vision Zero has been exported to other countries, other cities, other neighborhoods, it's taken a lot of different forms. And some communities have focused way, way, way too much on enforcement, for instance, and not very much on design. We at Strong Towns talk all the time about how design is the key to saving lives. And by the way, it also happens to make our neighborhoods more financially prosperous. Nice bonus there. Let's talk about New York. So de Blasio is coming to the idea that every neighborhood in America should have a Vision Zero plan because of what he's seen succeed in New York. However, there have been some sort of dubious returns on Vision Zero. Some are arguing that, you know, this year they've seen a spike in roadway deaths. There have been protests that have been making the news with people hosting die-ins in Central Park, I believe it was, over, I think, 17 cyclists killed in Brooklyn alone. Tell me a little bit about what you think about how New York has implemented its Vision Zero plan and how portable it might be to other places.
Well, the current administration, de Blasio's group, has inherited the approach from the Bloomberg administration. You know, the Bloomberg was mayor for like 12 or 16 years. I don't remember precisely. If you read Jeanette Sadik-Khan's book, Street Fight, which is fantastic, and she's been on this podcast, it's wonderful. She details the trade-offs and really the overarching philosophy that they adopted in, you know, going down this path. It was a safety issue. I mean, they were starting with safety. But they also, and I think this is key to it, integrated not just the design and enforcement aspects of it, but they also integrated the return on investment, the public spaces. How do we make New York a prosperous place? Vision Zero was a part of that overall drive. And they, I think, did a great job of integrating all those things together. The highest profile one is the trade-offs they made in Times Square. You know, Times Square used to be basically a car sewer, like something like 12 lanes of traffic. It was just absurd. They took away most of those lanes. I want to say it's down to like 3 or 4 now. Well, and they turned it into, yeah, this big, huge pedestrian area. That was a trade-off, saying we are better off moving people on foot as a city than we are moving people by vehicles through this space. To express the level of controversy and the amount of pushback they got on that, it was overwhelming. It was huge. It was overwhelming kind of in proportion to the success. Now, the opposite has been overwhelming. There is very few people today who would credibly argue to go back to what it was. It's been a huge success in New York. You take that mentality, the mentality that says we're not a city of people driving. We are a city where some people drive, but where a lot of people walk and bike and take transit. And those are the modes we're ultimately going to emphasize because that's our ticket to overall prosperity. That value shift has made the kind of micro implementations of Vision Zero strategies very, very successful. In other cities where you see them say, well, we want to be Vision Zero, but we're still going to be a city where everybody drives and we're car-centric and we're car-focused and everything is focused around the automobile. The implementation tends to be things like, well, pedestrians should wear reflective vests so that they're more visible. I mean, you had this thing with the bollards in your place. We're going to slow down traffic in here because it will make things a lot safer. And oh, by the way, it will also make it financially more productive and you know, all this stuff. And people flip out. They flip out because they're used to being able to drive at speed through the neighborhoods. most places have not, from a deep value standpoint, confronted that trade-off. And New York City, one of the reasons they've had such success, there's a lot to debate about their success too. I mean, it's not been perfect. But the reason they've seen such success is because they actually question the underlying values of their transportation system. And I think that makes them leaders in North America.
I think that's a really good distinction. It's like, what's the difference between a catchphrase, you know, a program initiative like Vision Zero, and like actually penetrating the culture of a place and becoming a value that is a pillar of how a place functions, you know, like that's a huge, huge difference. And I don't know how, like, at what point policy sort of hits that tipping point where it becomes not just like what we say we're going to do, but who we actually are, where, you know, there isn't just like a Vision Zero office in your city, but there's actually like a Vision Zero culture that I think you wouldn't call it a Vision Zero culture by that point. It would just be the unspoken sort of reality of your place. And I guess that's why I'm a little skeptical of de Blasio's let's make every city in the nation a Vision Zero nation. Let's put federal funds towards this. Tell me a little bit about how you think if so, how the federal branch of the government can help him lower our rates of pedestrian deaths, because it is a national health emergency. That's where things get a little sticky for me.
Let's pretend that Jeanette Sadik-Khan became the cabinet level head of transportation in the US, which, by the way, would be fantastic. What kind of things would we expect? I think we would expect that there would be far less money for the highways running through the middle of cities than there would be for the connections between cities. And I really think that is something that the federal government could do right now today that would have a huge impact. Stop funding these strodes. I mean, like, why is the federal government funding a strode through the middle of my city? It destroys my place. It creates this kind of negative economic feedback loop, and it's dangerous as heck. Like, why would we do it? I think you would also see, I hope, a shift at the federal level in just the regulatory burdens. One of the things they did in New York City is they started to challenge some of these kind of industry standards. You know, the AASHTO Green Book. The AASHTO Green Book has a lot of flexibility into it if you want to go that route. But the default is always to just stick to what has always been done. And that's kind of how the book is presented. You know, here's the standard. And then, oh, if you really want to go on a limb, you can vary from this, but here's the way to do it. And what they did in New York was really push the boundaries of that. Like, what can we do? And they were very proactive in demonstrating that things can be safer when they don't follow like the letter of the Green Book or the letter of the Manual Uniform on Traffic Control Devices. I think that you would see a lot of loosening of those kind of burdensome regulations and approaches that mandate that cities follow certain rules, and give them more flexibility within the boundaries of the streets that they have to do things a little bit differently, a little bit safer. Those would be huge changes that the federal government could do right now that I think someone like Jeanette would enact or would push to enact if she, you know, were put in a position like that.
Absolutely. I mean, I think we should just say Jeanette Sadik-Khan for president, right? Like, let's just skip over it all. Just kidding. But
she's just wonderful. I mean, and really, I think the combination with her is not only this, you know, very smart, kind of questioned the standard practice kind of person, but then also with a mindset and the moxie and kind of the gravitas to be able to push it through too. I mean, you have, I don't want to say this as like, you know, a blanket statement, but a lot of the engineering profession is just this old boys kind of network way of doing things. And I think having someone who's a strong, forceful personality in, who also is an outside the box thinker, who has, you know, she had enjoyed the support of a strong mayor. I think having the support, you know, in an executive branch to be able to make some of those changes would be huge. I just want to go full strong towns on this for a second, because one of the takeaways from Street Fight that is really, I think, important but overplayed was that the administration supported all this. I mean, you had in Michael Bloomberg someone who is fully committed. Michael Bloomberg, for all his positives and negatives, fully commits to a lot of crazy stuff. Him and I don't see eye to eye on Mountain Dew, for example. But he's like totally in on, you know, banning or getting rid of it.
You want a grant to get every citizen a midnight grape. Kickstart every day. So makes sense.
Yeah, well, I'm drinking one right now. I really like it. You have this kind of theory that what we need is a strong presidential candidate to come in and force this down every community's throat. And that's how change is going to happen. And, you know, there's a takeaway from Street Fight that says, like, this is a street fight. You need to go out and fight for this. And I think what is missing or what is downplayed, and it's not Jeanette that downplays it, but I think the people who take away lessons from it tend to downplay it, is that the reason this worked in New York is because you had a broader culture that embraced these changes. You had a broader culture of people who walk and bike, who want that to be safer. You have a broader culture that embraces transit as a way of life, and they want that to be productive. And so in a sense, you had this very fertile ground for the conversation of Vision Zero and how to implement it in this broad way in a place like New York. That is what Strong Towns is trying to do. When we say slow the cars, when we say no new roads, when we talk about financial productivity, when we question our development pattern and our transportation investments, what we are doing and the way we are doing it is to change the broader cultural narrative so that places will see more support for these types of things. I don't think it's good enough to just have like a mayor who has a vision take charge and, you know, force this to happen. I see that go bad in a lot of places. I think what needs to happen is this broader cultural dialogue and a shift in understanding that our future prosperity is going to be a lot better off when we can create great streets and great places to live and reap both the financial rewards from that and also, you know, the just human flourishing from that, as opposed to stay locked in this, you know, kinetic growth model based on moving cars as quickly as possible to as many far-reaching places as possible. That's a cultural narrative. And I really, that's what we're trying to do. I mean, that's what we wake up every day to try to change as broader culture. And yeah, thanks for giving me the chance to explain our business model one more time.
That's really crucial, though. And it really speaks to the idea of, you know, I was thinking about this as we were talking, because longtime listeners of Upzone will know that you and I identify very differently politically. I mean, I tend to align more left of center, though God knows I have my issues with that sort of branding. You tend to align a little more right of center, though you have your issues too. But one thing that I struggle with a lot with my particular political realm that I find myself in and just my everyday life outside of my haven oasis that I call my job is just that left of center folks that I hang out with specifically, you know, no shade on anyone who's listening, tend to think about policy in terms of like, how do we make a statement with policy about what we value? How do we hang a really big banner over our national agenda and say like, this is what we care about. So I know people who are looking at de Blasio's plan and saying like, whether or not it works, we need to at the federal level say that we don't tolerate deaths in our cities, whether or not that policy actually makes sense, whether or not that policy actually is going to be implemented beautifully in one city and terribly in another, you know, and if like one city, the way that they approach Vision Zero is, you know, they're like that city in Georgia that gave all the pedestrians flags to cross the street and prosecuted them if they didn't walk wearing reflective like ankle bracelets at night, even if, by the way, they got hit by a car, that's okay because we made the national statement. And I think that what you're saying makes so much more sense to me is like, how can we, through both policy, but also through a much, much, much broader set of solutions and constant conversations and very, very small, non-flashy interventions, create a place that cares about this stuff that has a lasting change in a way that just one policy alone never could. And, you know, that helps me feel a little bit more patriotic today. So thank you, Chuck.
Absolutely. Well, I think that local nuance is so important because if you turn this over to the engineers or the automated vehicle people and say Vision Zero, I can tell you the easiest way to get to Vision Zero, don't let anybody walk. You know, put up fences along every street and don't let anybody cross or walk or go anywhere. I mean, just you got to be in a car. That's their answer, really.
And none of us want that. So now I think that it's time that we talk about the down zone. I think it's time we talk about what we are doing when we're out walking our streets, walking our dogs, gardening, spending some time outside, if we're listening to audiobooks, if we're watching, you know, beating the heat by watching some TV or some movies. Tell me what has been on your media hit list lately, Chuck.
Well, beyond hitting refresh on the Major League Baseball trade deadline, there's a new book by Jim Rickards. Jim Rickards is an economist, done a lot of work with the CIA, the Defense Department, and other places doing like war gaming around economics. He's written three prior books in this series, and this is the last one. This one's called Aftermath: 7 Secrets of Wealth Preservation in the Coming Chaos. For people listening, he is one of these gold bugs, and that kind of, you know, when I say that, that puts you in a box that some people automatically discredit. But I think he's got a lot of very important things to say about the structure of the economy. And obviously, I'm reading the fourth book in the series. I found the first three to be informative. So I'd get it. It's a good book.
Good stuff. Well, I have had my mind erased by this heat. I am reading a lot, but it's nothing I would really recommend to Strong Tones folks, because I'm just like picking up novels about like immigrant experiences that are really, really big bummers and they're brutal. And like, I get halfway through them and I'm like, why am I doing this to myself? So I'm going to take a page from John Reuter's book this week and take an unconventional approach to down zone. I don't know if you listened last week, Chuck, but I asked John what he was consuming media wise to sort of get him through the summer. And he was like, media wise, I don't know, but I'm consuming a lot of ice cream. And he listed off all of the ice cream he's been eating, which I thought was really sweet. So I've been cooking a lot. I've been using my brand new Instant Pot that I got for my birthday a few months ago. And, you know, if you're really nice, I can send you a really good recipe for short ribs that were delicious. So that's my submission to the down zone, is Instant Pots are God's gift to people who are kind of lazy about grilling meat. So, yep, that's what I got today.
That's awesome. If you would like, and not to impose on you, so you're free to say no. But if you would like, I finished Chris Sarnati's book, Dignity, and I would be more than happy to send you my copy. It's in that vein of, you said, like, oh, I'm reading this book about immigrants. It's so depressing. There's some things in here that will depress you, but it's also beautiful. I mean, it's beautifully written and it's really important. He's going to be my guest on the Strong Towns podcast, I think, next week. I already interviewed him, so that one's in the can and it's so good. So yeah, I'm happy to do that. It's really good.
I would love to borrow it, and that would not be an imposition. It's on my to-be-read list on my telephone. So yeah, send it my way, or next time I see you, let's do a little book share. Cool. Well, that is what we've got for you this week on Upzone. Thank you so much for listening in. If you like what you hear, you can always support the Strong Towns movement in all the usual ways by going to strongtowns.org/membership. You can pre-order my co-host's book. Not just saying, it's a pretty good book. It's called Strong Towns, A Bottom-Up Revolution to Rebuild American Prosperity. You can find out more about that at strongtowns.org/strongamerica. And you can always just rate us on iTunes, or just tell a friend that you are listening to this cool podcast and you want them to talk to you about it. So thanks so much for listening in, and keep doing what you can to build a strong town.